everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by Oarock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of Oarock Studios.
And I'm Michael Gray. I'm, I guess, the head writer of Oarock Studios.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I can give you that one.
I can give myself a promotion.
Wait, what were you last month? I already forgot.
I don't know. Was I just the guy who got everybody else coffee? I think I was the guy who got everybody else coffee.
Well, all I got was tea, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's why I got promoted, was I was horrible at my job and you didn't want to fire me, so I got a promotion instead. Yes!
So how's it going? How's your last month been?
Pretty busy. How's your last month been? You're the one who's been doing way more video game work since in the past month than I have.
Well, this is a bad way to start the podcast, but I've actually haven't done a lot of Oarock stuff. No, I had another contract I was working on the last 2 weeks, and a contract I'm about to start next week. But before that, I did get a lot of work done on the pizza delivery boy who saved the world. I've gotten up to page 10 of 80, whatever, coded and arted and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because I thought you were doing the... Yeah, I noticed you got artwork for a couple of new characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Most of the cast is in place at this point. I can check my list if I could find it, which I can't. But I think there's like 5 or 6 more roles left to cast, and they're mostly just, you know, customers that we need 1 or 2 photos for.
Oh, I could... force some of my coworkers. I'll see. Let me know which ones. Well, if you can find the list.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, I'm pretty much at the point where I'll just, when I get to that point in the script, I'll start just hunting people down specifically for it and be like, "You look like the. Could you do this? Could you do this? Hey, could you do this for me?"
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, my coworkers could definitely play like angry customers. It'd be great.
All right, cool, cool. Yeah. I will whenever I get the list back out of my drawer. I'll get that for you.
All right, sounds good. So, what's with this contract work that you've been doing? Cuz I've only got one update to give and I don't think it's very updatey, so
this is the best podcast ever cuz I'm about to say I probably shouldn't talk too much about it.
Oh, you got an NDA?
I don't think I ever did sign anything. I don't know if it would be in bad form to talk about my clients explicitly, but I can give some general information about it. It's proofreading work. It's proofreading work for a game that... Oh man, this is good, actually. It was originally written in Russian, and then it was translated by Germans into English.
That sounds awesome, yeah. Because Russia and Germany are like the two bigger countries I see that do video game production work.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, they sent the script along to me, and this is a big one, too. It was 54,000 words, yeah, so it took me, you know, a few weeks to go through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the games we're playing as one of the podcast topics. So last month, I was playing Agatha Christie, Death on the Nile, and I just finished it, like, right now. It just took forever, because it was this really slow hidden objects game, but it was done originally in Russian. And I can tell because it was hidden objects. I don't like hidden objects. So what I did was
It seems like you play a lot of hidden object games.
There are good hidden objects games. This is a hidden objects game from like 5, 6 or so years ago. You know, back when the genre was getting started and they didn't have like any standardized rules. And so what this is you get 5 hints per level. And, you know, the level, you start off just having to find 20 items and then 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, and you still only get 5 hints. And there's a timer, too, so if you don't solve the challenge within 30 minutes, guess what? You have to do the entire thing over from the beginning again. So, I mean, it's got a conglomeration of unfriendly rules, and it wasn't exactly translated the best. I don't know if it's because I'm playing the European version or the American version. I mean, it could be that they're just using European names for the various things, but in order to get around it, basically what I did was I took a screenshot of the Hidden Objects Challenge, and Then I went into the actual game folder, and, you know, they've got a separate folder which has a picture of every single hidden object that could be found in that scene, and half of them were written in Russian, and so that's how that's how I knew this game was originally designed in Russian.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that sort of relates to how I've been, how I get this contract work. I mean, I do a lot of freelance proofreading for games like this, and the way I've gotten some of these gigs is that it's literally just I'll play an adventure game, and I'll notice that the final version on Steam has an awful lot of typos and grammar mistakes and doesn't really feel like it was like originally written in English or, you know, proofread by someone who speaks English natively. So I'll get in touch with them. I'll send them my resume. I'll say I've been a professional copy editor for 10 years, doing freelance work for 5 years, editor-in-chief of Game Cola for 11 years. Here's all my experience. Here's my resume. Here's what I could do for you. And sometimes, certainly not every time, but sometimes I get a gig out of it.
Oh, man, you should have done the Agatha Christie game.
I'll get in touch with them next.
Well, no, don't worry. That company, I'm sure, is out of business. So, do we have any other games we're talking about? That was literally, it took me like a month to get through that one game because it was just so unfun to play, I guess. And also, badly organized in that it's supposed to be, we have the investigation and then you question the suspects. And it's sort of badly organized that I can question the suspects about clues that I haven't found in investigation yet. And so that was just another problem with the game. It's like, what are they even talking about? Why does Poirot, why is he going on and on about being drugged? And then I learned, oh, by the way, somebody put drug in his wine, knocked him out. And I'm like, oh, okay. Should have told us that before he could yell at people about it.
Oh, poor little hidden object game.
It's okay. There were three more in the series. Or
oh, there were, okay.
There are three more in the hidden object series. Hopefully they got better. 2007, so that was 10 years ago.
Oh my god, 2007 was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's really upsetting. But I wish you hadn't brought that up.
Nowadays in Hidden Objects Challenges, there's generally, you know, like a working hint button. So if you get just completely stuck, you can just spam the hint button, you know. You don't have to remain completely stuck forever.
Here's an exciting thing. I did my taxes this weekend.
Oh boy.
And I did what you were talking about before. I got the estimated payments thing all set up.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun, and it'll certainly be a lot better this time next year when I don't owe a ton of money to the federal government because I will have paid it already. Yeah, I don't know if this is gauche to talk about in front of someone who knows, you know, who's kind of in-depth on tax stuff, but I used Tax Act. I used, you know, computer software website thing to figure all this stuff out for me.
Oh, yeah, no, that's no problem at all. Basically, the way you figure out estimated taxes is you it's called estimated, as in you just guess how much you owe in tax, how much you're going to owe in taxes. Then you divide that by four, and that's your quarterly payment that you make every 3 months. It's really not anything super fancy.
Yeah, no, it was super straightforward, and like, I mean, the way they laid it out was, this is how much you paid in taxes for your small business this year. Do you think this is what you're going to pay next year? I'm like, yeah, it's probably close enough. It's better than zero, which is what I was doing before. So
yeah, there are two different ways to do it, and that's one of them. The other is to basically fill out a tax form for next year and then use that as a guessing point. Say we know, wow, all of a sudden our big product's coming out this next year. We're going to make $3,000 off of Pizza Delivery Boy.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, the type of industry that we work in, I mean, who knows how much money we will make this year. Maybe Pizza Boy will take off and be our number one bestseller of all time. Maybe it'll sell 12 copies, you know?
Yeah, and so that's what I did with Cat President, and I'm like, I think it made more money than I was expecting. I'm just going to make an estimated tax payment just to be safe.
Yeah.
And so I just made one in January.
Cool. Is there a penalty if you pay too much in estimated taxes? There's nope. Clearly one if you don't pay enough.
But... Yeah, nope. There is no, yeah, there's no penalty for overpayment of tax.
They're totally cool with that.
They're totally fine with that. Let me see. A corporation that has overpaid its estimated tax may apply for a quick refund if the overpayment is at least 10% of its expected tax income tax liability and at least $500. You have to file Form 4466 corporate application for quick refund of overpayment of estimated tax after the end of the year and before the corporation files its income tax return.
I would be very surprised if I overestimated in excess of $500.
Yeah.
So taxes, I know everyone's really excited to hear about taxes, but, you know, what else is new? So you haven't really been able to do a lot video games-wise this month?
So yeah, no, the only video game stuff really this month is I got a message. Let me pull this up. I got a message from my wife's bridesmaid, who you met at the wedding. So I sent her a message on May 4th, 2016, about doing the artwork for Trapped in a Soap Opera. So, you know, I wanted her to do the artwork for it because I think at the actual wedding we mentioned, like, getting her to do artwork for something because that's what she actually does. And so she just responded to me this past month. So that was over a year or so. She gave me a good contact number, but she's still interested. I need to send a message back to her. I was waiting to talk to you first. It's like, how should I go about this? I'm like, well, we've already got all the artwork done for the game now.
Yeah, we don't have anything we're like at the art stage for anymore.
So I was wondering, it's like, oh, is there any game or something we could rush through production? Or is I don't have any scripts written.
I'm extremely reluctant to start another
project. I know, right?
At the moment.
Yeah. I was like, I don't think we have anything that's even close to like getting that.
No, I mean everything else is just at like the idea stage right now, basically, or I guess or is like the lawyer FMV game, and all of the art is full motion video, so that doesn't help us.
Yeah, because I was just wondering, it's like, oh, I should probably respond, but...
Yeah, the timing isn't working out for us.
Yeah, this is bad timing, so...
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we want to, like, redo the art in one of the shorter games.
Yeah, no, that would take forever. So I think might be a topic for, I guess, another podcast would be, it's like, oh, what do we want to do in the future? I guess we've already got our list of things we want to do in the near future, which is the Pizza Delivery Boy, You Save the World. I wrote all that Cat President DLC and the Lawyer FMV game. Have we talked about that on the podcast yet?
I don't know that we have, actually. We don't have a name for it yet, do we?
I thought it was Internet Court.
Okay. Do you want to explain it?
Hey, everybody, we're making a game called Internet Court.
Yeah, I mean, so the idea is it's a game set in the near future in a time where legal matters are resolved not in a physical courtroom, but in a virtual space, basically on Skype, you know, with everyone talking into their webcams, basically, their phones or their tablets or whatever.
Yeah, and basically, I thought the reasoning behind that was, you know, we want to do an FMV game, you know, get video footage of everybody, but it's kind of hard to do that unless everybody's all together at the exact same place at the exact same time.
Which is never, ever going to happen.
It's basically not, no.
And this is kind of the perfect, like, setup for something like that. Everyone can just record themselves separately and we can edit it all together into one big video game.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you'd originally gone over this idea with Diana Gray or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd gone over with me, and we had random ideas for the game, too. And nothing clicked until, you know, you mentioned that you and Diana came up with the idea of Internet Court, and then that was it. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's great, because we were thinking a murder mystery in like a... yard sailing.
I still have that yard sale idea pocketed. We're gonna make a game about yard sales at some point. It's gonna happen. Francie Drew and the missing 25 cents.
Yes. Yeah. No. I was trying to think of a good lawyer game, and you know, I wrote like a good intro, but then I couldn't think of any crimes or anything which I hadn't seen before. Like, you know, Phoenix Wright is always doing murder. Everybody's always doing murder in these big games.
Yeah.
And you know, the only one I could think of which wasn't murder was basically this really awful Nancy Drew book, Nancy Drew and the Email Mystery, which is an awful book. Don't read it unless you like really awful books. It was written in like late 80s, early 90s by somebody who has clearly never used a computer before.
Oh, I love that, though. That's like that Boxcar Children book I read. There's secret clues hidden in old adventure games. Oh, so good.
Okay. I mean, the mystery is that somebody like stole the legal files and was emailing them off to another legal firm in town, you know, passing off evidence and that sort of thing. And Nancy solves the mystery by looking at the email address.
Of course.
It takes her 100 pages to realize, wait a minute, there's this box that says to and from. Whoa, the culprit left their name in the from box.
Wow.
That person's the culprit. Yeah.
That's
so
good.
So that was... yeah. I don't know, it definitely came across as, like, you know, some out-of-touch person, you know, producer's like, hey, kids love email nowadays, let's make a mystery about email. You're writing it! And the person's like, oh, okay. And that problem permeates to this day with the current Nancy Drew series. Book number one, I think, came out 2013. Or no, it's book number two in that series. Nancy doesn't know what Google is. She's shocked to learn that somebody could Google her, and like, this Nancy was born in the 90s. She knows what Google is.
But yeah, so Internet Court, like, you've have the whole like script. Like, it's a really long script, isn't it? It's pretty big. It's pretty beefy.
It was I had it open here just a minute. I think what we wanted to do was there were a couple of different ideas I had and you had. I think Every case was, it's about 15 pages, 10 to 15 pages was each case. That was the idea. And then the third case or the fourth case would be a double length case.
Right.
And some of the ideas I wanted was, I wanted more focus on the prosecutor, I guess. I didn't want it to be a Phoenix Wright ripoff. So I wanted the prosecutor to kind of be the main character.
Yeah. I was going to say, I really like what you did where, the playable character or the main character of each case. I mean, it kind of changes from case to case. Like, sometimes you're playing as the prosecutor or the DA or one of them is the judge.
Yeah, I think it's the prosecutor, then the judge, and then the defense attorney. And then with the final case, each of them get like a 10-minute segment. It just worked out really easy. And it's like, whoa, that makes it a double length case.
Yeah, I think that was a really good idea. I mean, that's one of the things we're going to run into in making this game is, you know, making it different enough from the Phoenix Wright series. Kind of like how Cat President had to be pretty different from Hatoful Boyfriend to not be seen as a ripoff just based on the art style alone. This one has to be seen as not a ripoff of Phoenix Wright, despite having, you know, similar overarching themes and similar kind of gameplay. And I think that step is a pretty big one. And obviously the full motion video will hopefully make it look pretty different.
I don't know, man. Those super realistic graphics of Phoenix. Oh, did we ever talk about Phoenix Wright case number 4?
Did we? I don't remember. Wait, which game?
Phoenix Wright game? Game number 6, the most recent. Yeah, the new one. The untranslatable case.
I don't even remember. What was the issue with it?
Noodles. There were noodles. It was the noodle store. Solving the case required a knowledge of all the various different types of Japanese noodles.
Yes, no, please. And, if you haven't played this yet, please pause or skip forward because I'm really excited about this case and I want to talk about how weird it was.
And so much. And one of the jokes was all about sake because everybody knows what sake is, right?
Of course.
You know, so it just had a lot of stuff like that. Like, what was it? Udon noodles versus the other type of noodles?
Yes, that was the big revelation toward the end of the case. It wasn't soba noodles. It was udon noodles. It just blew everyone's mind. Blew the case wide open. It's so weird. Ridiculous. Oh, I got a big laugh out of that. I'm pretty sure I wasn't supposed to, but I mean, obviously, it's, you know, 6 months later, I'm still kind of cracking up over it. So.
It was great, though.
I mean, obviously they should have localized it to all be about burgers.
So that's what I did in my walkthrough. when it eventually comes up, no, I just replaced all the various types of noodles with different types of burgers. Instead of soba, I called it sliders.
Yes. Oh man, have you posted this walkthrough yet?
No, I haven't even posted case number 3 yet. Oh. So it's gonna be a while. It was kind of hard. I could tell why, you know, they would have had problems localizing it, but.
Well, it seems like somewhere, like, after the original trilogy, it seems like they kind of shifted away from trying to pretend that the game is set in America and trying to pretend that it's set in California and everyone here eats burgers and it's not wine, that's grape juice. And I think they really let it be a lot more, you know, true to the original details. You know, they tried less to Americanize it, I guess.
I know, but then you end up with things like that case where you're supposed to know, what was it? Because that guy was like a theater performer, and it's a very specific type of theater, which is only in Japan, and he's doing a specific Japanese comedy stand-up routine.
Yeah. I mean, to localize it, they would have had to rewrite the entire thing from scratch, though. I mean, they would have had to, I guess, make him some sort of just stand-up comic, I guess. And redone all of the art in that case, you know, redrawn all the noodles so they were burgers or whatever instead. Like, I mean, I can certainly see why they wouldn't have wanted to do that effort. And I mean, honestly, like, I feel like fans are kind of resentful of stuff like that when localization goes too far and changes too much. So I can kind of see why they wouldn't want to do that.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't have any problem with the localization with the first 3 games. That was really good. But, you know, that was sort of something I wanted to do with the Cat President. I don't know if I've mentioned this, but some of the stuff in Cat President, you know, I'd played too many of the Japanese dating sims where they don't even try to localize it, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of wanted to get that feel with Cat President, and so I kind of, like, make references to, like, American things, which probably will not be easily translated.
Oh, too bad. Well, we haven't tried to translate it yet, so we may never know.
But yeah, besides cat puns, they go into American law. Isn't there like one point where somebody starts quoting like the requirements to become a president, which is you have to be over 40, you have to be born in this country. Yeah,
that actually came up. It's interesting because I've seen comments on Let's Plays where people are talking about how they actually learned stuff about the government by playing this game. And I think they're being sincere. I don't think they're making jokes about, you know, they learned that the president has to be a cat. Like, I think they genuinely learned, you know, like you were saying about the requirements to be a president and how the American voting system works, stuff like that. That's kind of, it reminds me of how you've told the story, not on this podcast, but in your blog, about how you have a YouTube video of a Garfield game that's like that has somehow ended up on some teacher's syllabus in some elementary school that like they require the students to watch that. I'm just waiting for that to happen with Cat President. Just waiting for that day.
Yeah. No, I mean I that was part of the fun of doing Cat President was actually learning some of that stuff, because you know, the difference between a caucus and whatever the other one is, it's not always I don't know. I don't think we really went into that much detail about that, especially because we made up our own rules.
That's true. Well, yeah, because a lot of it is like, this is what it used to be under the human system. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it's presented a lot of the times. But
let's see. Professor Garfield, fact or opinion, 54,000 views.
So, like, that's got to be, like, a decent moneymaker for you. I assume you've
had 920 views in the past month. It just keeps regularly. Incredible. It only made $1.11, so it's not, like, a huge moneymaker, but it's still very good when it comes to, wow, it's consistently, people are still consistently watching it.
Well, if you ever want to feel good about your YouTube views, the few times I've tried to post videos for my old yard sale blog, it would be, like, 4 views.
4 views, and then, you know, half a year later, it's like 4 views.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's still 4 views. Yeah.
Yeah, I Yeah, I mean, I did all the others in the Garfield, the Professor Garfield series, and these are not, I mean, they didn't catch on. I guess it's only that one which had the magic. I don't know why.
Incredible. That should be our target audience is syllabi. We need to find a way to get our game onto someone's syllabus.
Educational games, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they don't really make a lot of those anymore. Or at least, you know, you don't see like Mario teaches typing anymore, stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Or they're like, there hasn't been a Carmen Sandiego game since some random one on PlayStation 2 that nobody played. Stuff like
Oh,
that.
yeah,
Yeah.
that game. Yeah, no, there was the 2001 game. I remember because it had the Twin Towers in it, and that was the year of, September 11th, and so it was just bad timing on their part. But yeah, then they had the PlayStation game, which came out like 2 or 3 years later, and nobody played it.
It was like a third person, like kind of actiony game,
Yeah,
right?
sneak around game, and it had like two of the main characters from the, But the game that came out in 2001 was great. I'm surprised it didn't get an actual sequel.
I mean, I used to love those games.
Yeah, but I think I know the game, the one game they have the kids. They have a bunch of coding games, and then those are all just I don't want to say marketing, but they're all marketing because there's an Angry Birds coding game, and there's a Frozen coding game, and I'm sure there's a Transformers coding game,
I
and
mean, if I guess if it actually teaches kids, you know, I mean, coding is a useful skill.
I mean, it doesn't teach them how to code, but it teaches them how to think like a coder, if that makes sense. So, I mean, instead of actually typing out the commands, basically what you do is you know, they have this box which executes this command. So, like, this one box is, oh, that's spin around in a circle, and this one box is character turns right, and this one box is character takes 3 steps forward. And you basically line up the series of boxes and press go, and then the character follows all those instructions. And so it's kind of like coding, but kind of not. But I don't know if like you said, if that's what it takes to get kids to get thinking of coding, it's like that's fine.
Yeah, actually, now that we're talking, I just remembered that I actually played an educational visual novel on Steam a year or so ago, called Go Go Nippon, My First Trip to Japan. And it's this weird, like, it's about a guy who's going to Japan and he ends up living with these two cute anime girls and all this, you know, kind of weird stuff like that. But it's like the main crux of the game is about you, like, visiting Japanese tourist locations, neighborhoods, temples, and learning like the history about them and like learning Japanese phrases and about the culture and stuff. Like, it's actually supposed to prepare you for a real trip to Japan. I thought that was kind of interesting.
No, we should make something like that, because
Yeah.
I don't know
Oh, what would it be about?
how to prepare to Portland. Grow a beard. Here's some flannel.
Oh, wait, I thought you were suggesting a game on about how to grow a beard.
That would be great. Yeah, no, I can't grow a beard right, so. No, but I mean, I'm just growing a general beard at this moment because I had to basically buzz my hair for the pizza delivery boy who saved the world, and I thought, hey, what if I grow a beard at the same point where my hair is buzzed? I could determine whether beard hair grows faster than normal hair.
So it's a science experiment.
That's basically it. And
Oh, that's
I
so
know.
good.
But some parts of my mustache are thicker than other parts of my mustache. I don't understand why.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, Michael had to buzz his hair real short to portray one of the characters in Pizza Delivery Boy You Saved the World. Yeah, I mean, the lengths we go to for our art, right? It looks really good in the game though, so.
Oh, I'm sure that, when I get a version of the game to actually look at, all my notes are going to be, this is awful. I look bad. No, take that away.
No. Too late. It's too late. We can't redo it now.
I'm like, no, switch. Where's the normal? Yeah, I think no, but I'm just saying I'm probably gonna get mad. It's like, no. I know there's another picture because I've got all the pictures on my desktop. I'm like, use picture number 0001 where I. What are you doing? That was a picture of me with my eyes accidentally closed in between pictures.
You
Why did
did
you
say that
take
about like
that?
the main picture, the first picture I used for you, where you're like standing and smiling and waving at the
That was
camera.
an in-between photo.
It blurred so well, though. We can't get rid of it now. Like, it literally, like, it matches with the line, like, hi, I'm Doug Rivers. And he's, you know, waving and smiling. Oh, it looks perfect.
Yeah, but so there are two pictures of me waving. There is one normal, and then there is one that my wife took when I was moving my hand down and transitioning to the next pose. And Paul wanted to transition one because his eyes are closed and it looks funny.
Well, I will. You will certainly be able to ask me to fix, change, whatever, and I will do it. It won't be that big of an issue. So we'll take care of it. Don't worry.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we're about halfway through this podcast. Let's go with reader mail.
Yeah, we actually have three different questions to go over this month. So that's pretty exciting. So let's just dive right into it. This one was sent in on Twitter by Elizabeth Pfeffer, a name you've probably heard on the podcast several times by now. And she asked us, what inspired you and Michael to make games? And what do you want to see less of in games? And this has been my answer to questions like this for like a decade now. We have to stop having games where you can't save anywhere. It's 2017. Let me save anywhere and turn my Nintendo off and go to sleep. Please, I'm begging you. I'm begging you to let me turn this game off.
What games are you playing that don't have that feature? Oh, you're not playing mobile games, I guess.
It was, the new King's Quest game just came out the end of last year. You can't save anywhere. You have to wait till to a checkpoint, you know, till you solve a puzzle or something. And sometimes I'm too tired to solve a puzzle and I just want to go to bed.
Maybe they did that on purpose because for the nostalgia value, but...
No! I'm pretty sure in the old King's Quest games you could save anywhere.
That actually is right.
I mean, the old Sierra, all those old games, all the point-and-click adventure games. No, and this one, I mean, it's like the Walking Dead games, too, by Telltale. It's the same thing. It's, you have to get to a certain scene, and then, you know, you see a little icon on the bottom of the screen. Saving now, and once it's done, you're safe to turn off your system, but not before then, or you'll lose progress, and I'm not a fan, if I haven't made that clear.
So that's why I love the casual, I guess, games, is because they will automatically save your progress.
Yeah, I mean, the only genres I don't really care about, like sports games, you know, it's fine. Like, I'm not gonna, or Rocket League, which is the game I've been playing for like a year and a half now. Like, yeah, sure, I'm not gonna ask you to let me save, like, in the middle of a match, a middle of a 5-minute match. Fine, that's ridiculous. But, like, these big single-player, story-driven games, yeah, just let me stop playing.
Interesting, because I've actually seen how they program the save files. I don't know if it's changed, but, you know, with these casual games, basically the save file is, it saves like three things. It saves, okay, here's everything in your inventory, here's what screen you're looking at right now, and if you're on a hidden objects challenge, it just has like, okay, you found items 1 through 9, and that's it.
Oh, interesting.
So, I mean, literally, if you wanted to, you could, like, manipulate the save file and say, okay, I'm on scene number 12 now.
I found everything. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, so as working with RenPy and Adventure Game Studio as our primary game development engines, that's one of the lucky things that we don't usually have to worry about in programming it. Like, the game, the engine already knows how to save stuff, which is very handy. Like, I mean, I guess it's probably fairly complicated, but it's an important feature, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're not supposed to actually be able to look at the save files, because these games are, like, auto-saved. Like I said, they're automatically auto-saved, so, you know, you can quit whenever you want, and the game knows exactly where you are.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why developers sometimes don't use it, right? Is they don't want people to abuse the feature by, like, they get to a boss, and they, you know, just save before the boss is about to attack them every single time, and you know, just kind of power through the boss battle that way, stuff like that. Like, and that's fine. Like, if you can turn the game off and it saves where you are automatically, like, that works for me too.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Think, like, what it'd be is, I mean, in that situation, it's like, okay, well, I would have it so the game auto saves and, you know, you autosave at the start of the boss battle rather than whatever turn you are in the boss battle. That's fine, too. I know some games do it that way.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess it depends. If it's, like, one of these, like, long Final Fantasy style battles, though. Like, I mean, they have battles that can go on for, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, like an hour. And it would be great to be able to save, I guess, in between them. But again, people would complain because maybe it takes away from the challenge if you don't have to go. I don't know. It's stupid. I hate
it. The alternative I've seen that with Fire Emblem is it's a quick save feature.
Yeah.
You know, you'd like quick save in between the battle, and you can only load that once. I mean, you can like load it multiple times. It's like, that gets around it. It's like, great.
That works for me, too. Just whatever lets me turn the game off. But I guess I've probably complained about this long enough. Is there anything you would like to see less of in games?
I don't know. I haven't played any games besides that awful Hidden Object Challenge, and I'd like to see less of that game in particular.
Yeah, actually, I guess you kind of covered this earlier in the episode when you were talking about the things you didn't like about that and about older Hidden Object games in general.
Yeah, but I mean, that was definitely the style back 10 years ago when the genre was getting really started, was having timed Hidden Objects challenges is just, that's awful. But, you know, the world has moved away from that and everybody's happy. Do they really have time challenges very often in video games now?
I don't know. I guess I haven't. I don't recall off the top of my head seeing one recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I play a lot of the mobile games, and those have time challenges in the sense that, I paid 200 coins to build the house, and I have to wait 50 minutes for the house to be built, or I could pay real money. And yeah,
I would like to see less microtransactions in mobile games.
that's fair, and that's one of the random things I think we make fun of in the pizza delivery boy.
That's right. Yes.
Oh, they had so much fun writing that. It's like, yeah. I kind of want to expand that into its own game, but it'd be...
All right, let's move on to the next question. This one comes from Victoria Budkey, who, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing, I never know if I'm pronouncing anyone's names right, just as a blanket statement, but she actually portrays a character in the new The Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World game. She wants to know, what's the most frustrating thing you face in the final stages of a game development?
I think right now our frustrating thing is going on getting the game actually through a Steam Greenlight. Which we haven't mentioned yet so far in this episode.
I don't want to talk about it. It's bad. It's going bad.
So let's not talk about that. That's the frustrating thing that's going on right now.
For the love of all that is good in the world, everyone please vote for our games on Steam Greenlight. But no, I was going to say, like these like weird, like unexpected issues that crop up, like right, like, and take forever for me to deal with. Like with The Beard in the Mirror, for example, like, I was still somehow finding bugs in the code like a month before the game was supposed to come out. I've been working on this game for like 11 years at that point, and I was finding bugs in like the first like three or four scenes.
That's right. I remember seeing somebody complaining about this on Twitter too. It's like, you know, the game will go through testing and none of the testers find a bug, but you can guarantee that one of the people who got, you know, a free review copy finds the bug on their first try.
That wasn't even that. This was me playing it after the testers, after I've been testing it myself for literally a decade and still finding like, oh, when he examines this object in that room, he says something he's not supposed to say, and it got so frustrating. Like, I cleaned up everything I could find. I played it again, found a million more things to clean up, and it really just got to the point where it was like a week before the game was about to release, and I had to just say, I can't test it anymore. I can't. I'm done. It's done. It's done. I'm sending it out. If hopefully Let's Players will mention it in their video if they find something, and then I'll know and fix it. But I'm done. But so far, no one's complained anything. So knock on wood.
That's good. So both of the people who bought the game haven't complained.
Oh, it was more than two. It was five, something like that. But then, of course, there was also the photo licensing issues I ran into with Cat President. Like, you know,
that was awful. Yeah,
2 months before the game was finished, where I realized I had to replace half the pictures in the game because I misunderstood the Creative Commons license That was also fun. And there's still pictures in the game that Michael hasn't seen yet. Probably.
Yeah, because of that, yeah. I love how we had to change Thunderpaw's hair, and his hair is the right. old hair in the...
I had to change his hair because I couldn't secure the rights to his original hair.
Yeah, so, but did we get his hair updated in the trailer?
No, I don't think we ever did. I think his trailer still has the trailer still has the old hair.
That's Oops. Awesome.
Hopefully no one, we don't get in trouble for that. But that's fine, like...
Somebody can make derivative work based on that trailer now.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, this isn't the case for some of the photos, but a lot of them, it was usually like an upgrade. The newer image I was generally happier with. Like, I thought the new hairstyle looked pretty cool. Some of the new backgrounds looked pretty cool. So, at the very least, I was trying to, you know, make it a positive and introduce, you know, better quality pictures, more appropriate pictures, you know, more original even, if I, you know, figured out how to take a picture of the scene in the real, you know, actually in myself or you when I had you running around the airport trying to find pictures. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it all works out. But, yeah, it's like, That's certainly what's very frustrating for me toward the end of a game's development is the unexpected issues that take all of the time to fix. I'm all fired up now, man.
Yeah, what's our third question?
one more. And this one's also from Elizabeth Pfeffer. And she asks, what movie would you like to see as a game?
Don't they make games based off movies now?
I was thinking about this. I feel like they don't nearly as much. Like they're like the Avengers movies, for example. Somehow, like I don't think there were just like straight up the Avengers the movie the game. Like there was like Lego Marvel games, but those weren't even. They didn't really even have anything to do with the films, for example.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw just the other day in the library a Lego Batman movie, which is based off like the video game trilogy. Yeah, I was just surprised that the video game series was so popular. It got its own movie.
Yeah. So I actually do kind of think that I you know, back in like the Super Nintendo era, like every big blockbuster got a weird crummy side scroller, and I feel like they don't do that as much anymore. Like the really big ones will get a Lego game like Star Wars, Harry Potter, Batman, Marvel, all of those, but
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, they try to keep the movie script like a secret, right? They don't want people knowing what's going to be in the movie ahead of time.
Yeah.
They have to tell the people who are making the game, and so I remember, I think there's at least one time where it's like, oh, there's a scene in the game which was not in the movie. Oh yeah, that's the page master too. That was weird, because Frankenstein basically got cut out of the entire movie, but...
That's right, I think I remember reading about this, yeah.
He plays a really big role in the game. He's the main character in yeah. Scary Land.
Oh man, so. That must be a weird, challenging thing about making licensed games, like, in conjunction with the thing you were supposed to be basing it off of. Like, stuff like that, where, like, the scene will get cut in the editing room, you know, last minute, and then... You know, you're stuck. You've already coded that level. Like it's already done. It's already done. It's already in the game. Oh
whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa! There's another Radiant Historia game coming out. No way.
What? Wait, what?
Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology coming out in Japan.
That game came
June
out forever
29th,
ago, didn't it?
2000. Yes, it did.
Like a long time ago.
Now I'm gonna look up where the original one. Yeah, it came out for the DS.
Yeah. No, I remember people were talking about it and comparing it to Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, it was okay. Okay, yeah, the original game came out February 22nd, 2011, and they're releasing the sequel in 2017.
It's a remake. It's a remake.
No?
No? Wikipedia says it's a remake.
It does? You're right.
An enhanced remake for the Nintendo 3DS called Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology.
Oh, well, never mind then.
Sorry. Oh, we got all pumped for nothing.
Darn.
Well, that's a game you'd like to see, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the original. It was okay. It's weird time travel, but I liked it. what was it? It was your friend has like a mechanical leg, and the leg breaks, you know, in timeline 2. And so I thought the solution was, we'll just go back in time earlier and get the leg from there, or you know, go back in time and warn him, hey, don't do this dangerous situation, you'll break your leg.
Sure.
But the solution is to jump to the other timeline, murder your friend, take the leg from his dead corpse, then go back to timeline 2 and say, here's your leg.
What? No.
Here's a replacement leg for you. And he's like, wow, this fits just perfectly like the first one.
Oh. Actually, you talking about time traveling games on the DS just makes me want to talk about Time Hollow for an hour. But
yeah, where's our Time Hollow sequel enhanced remake?
Oh, someday. I guess on that note, we're pretty close to the end of this podcast. Should we start wrapping up?
I couldn't think of
I'm sorry. Did you have any?
Let's go with the Lego Batman movie, which is like the only movie I've seen this year. So.
You want to see Lego, the Lego Batman movie, the game.
Yeah.
That sounds
good. I wanted to cross over with Lego Batman, the Batman video game.
Gosh. All right, I think that about does it for this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglethumph, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit oarock.com for the complete library. I'm begging you, please vote for our games on Steam Greenlight. That would be the Francie Drew and Friends Collection and the Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World. Really, do it. If you have a Steam account, if you don't, register a Steam account and do it. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And if you have any questions about game development or our games specifically, we would love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. No, I don't think I've ever gotten an email on that address yet. I don't think that's ever happened. People just tweet at me instead, which also works. I get questions on Twitter instead. So.
Oh man, why doesn't some movie like come to us and ask us to make a game for them?
Oh, ask me next month. I'll tell you about the time I tried to adapt a novel. Or no, not a novel. It was a nonfiction story into a video game, a book.
Oh yeah. We've got a topic for next month. Yay. Email it to yourself at
podcast at oarock. Yes. Oh man, that was fun. Made a prototype and everything. Anyway, anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Nope. Just thanks for playing our games, and yes. Please vote for our games on Steam Greenlight. I'm not taking that off of my my Twitter account until it passes. So.
Well,
our Steam Greenlight disappears in a fiery
pit. Like that could be any, literally, like any. I've been using the word literally too much in this podcast. It could be any minute. Really, it was supposed to be their target for getting rid of it was spring. So,
Yeah, we'll see.
And on that note, bye everyone.
Bye.
And they've actually, they always list me on their tax forms as filing as a single, not jointly.
Have you fixed your W-4 with them?
No, I told them a bunch of times that I'm married.
You have to actually file the W-4 that says you're single with the correct amount of withholding.